All right. Hello, everyone. My name is Matthew Olms, and I'm a master's student with the Soil Science Department at the University of Saskatchewan, and I'm here to talk about the effect of stand termination strategy and fertilization history on greenhouse gas emissions from two forage stands in northeastern Saskatchewan. So the forage sector has the potential to be used for, or as a tool for climate change mitigation. The conversion of marginal cropland to mixed native and introduced forage species has been shown to increase soil carbon content by 0.6 to 1.2 megagrams per hectare per year in Saskatchewan. And this carbon sequestration potential is probably considerably higher than for annual crops due to the robust root system that develops over multiple years of growth. As you can see in this picture here, the forage species on the right has considerably larger root mass than the annual crop species on the left. This project was done on land used for forage seed production, as it's the most heavily managed of all forage systems, with fertilizer typically being added every year. In Canada, about 130,000 hectares of land is used for forage seed production, with about a quarter of that occurring in Saskatchewan. So one of the major challenges then comes in retaining this stored carbon once a stand is terminated and replaced or converted back to annual cropping. Cultivation or termination with a non-selective herbicide like Roundup is typically how this is done, and there's a need to determine which method is the most or has the biggest effect on greenhouse gas emissions in the spring. And this is needed because greenhouse gas emissions from forage systems in the northern Great Plains are extremely limited. Another facet of this project, which I'm not going to be able to talk about today because I'm waiting for some data, is examining how termination strategy and fertilization history affects various carbon pools in the soil and which method is the most detrimental to these carbon pools. So the objective then of this part of the study is to determine the effect of termination strategy and fertilization history on the production of greenhouse gases following the termination of these two forage stands in northeastern Saskatchewan. So this project has two major components. There's a field experiment and an incubation experiment, and it takes place on two fields, one near Carrot River, Saskatchewan, which has two sites located on opposite ends of the field, and one near Arborfield, Saskatchewan, which just has one site. The field experiment was done entirely on the Carrot River sites just due to logistical reasons, and the incubation experiment was done with intact soil cores taken from all three sites. And the plots were originally established as a randomized complete block design for previous projects, and then they were split in half by cultivation for my project. And I used plots that were fertilized in the fall with broadcast urea, because that's the most common practice in Canadian forage systems right now. So this is just a map showing where my field sites are located. They're about 6 miles apart from each other, and they're located just off the edge of the boreal forest. So the soils at my Carrot River site are mainly a mix of Carrot River Glade Rago dark gray and Glade Calcareous dark gray soils. And the farmer planted Success Hybrid Brome Grass in 2010, and it was removed at the end of 2013. The soils at the Arborfield site are mainly Melfort Glade Black soils, and he planted Comer Timothy in 2009 and then removed it at the end of 2013. So for my incubation study, they each took place over 6 weeks, with a gas sample being taken the first day after simulated tillage, and then once per week after that. Intact soil cores were taken by pounding a 10-centimeter diameter section of PVC tubing into the ground to remove approximately the top 15 centimeters of soil. And the cores were kept in trays of water over the course of the incubation, just to maintain them at field capacity. And I also put anion and cation exchange resin probes in each of the core to measure the nutrient supply rate over the course of the incubation, and they were replaced once per week after the gas sample was taken. The first incubation experiment was done with cores taken from the Arborfield site at the end of 2013, and I took 4 cores from each of the 8 plots for a total of 32 cores, and they were frozen to simulate winter, and then after they were thawed, half of the fertilized and unfertilized cores were randomly selected to undergo simulated tillage. And this is a picture of the tillage simulator that I used. And I used this design because the prongs are adjustable, so then I was able to keep tillage depth consistent among the cores because I wanted to till about the top 10 centimeters, which is pretty common for around Saskatchewan. My second incubation experiment was done with cores taken from the Carrot River sites, and they were taken at the start of this summer just after snow melt. And I took 2 cores from each of the 16 plots from the untilled side, with, again, half of the fertilized and unfertilized cores being randomly selected for simulated tillage. But this time I also took 1 extra core from the side that was tilled by the farmer because I wanted to compare how they how the emissions were compared to my simulated tillage. So as you can see here, the simulated tillage does a pretty good job of breaking up the soil without totally pulverizing it. And this is one of the chambers that I used to measure my gas fluxes, and they're made with two sections of PVC pipe glued to PVC sewer caps, and they were joined with a rubber coupler and hose clamps to make an airtight seal. And I installed a rubber septum in the top for gas sample extraction, and we also installed small fans to mix the gas and prevent stratification. And then samples were taken at 30 and 60 minutes with an average of 4 lab air samples used as a zero point. So on to my results. So for the first incubation experiment, there was no significant differences in carbon dioxide emissions between any of the treatments. But as you can see in these top two lines, the cores that were fertilized had slightly higher emissions. When analyzed based just on fertilizer versus unfertilized and not based on cultivation, the effect actually becomes significant, with the fertilized cores emitting about 234 grams per meter squared over the course of the 6 weeks, compared to 207 grams per meter squared for the same period. And this is likely due to forage systems being starved of nitrogen, so as soon as nitrogen is applied, the microbial respiration increases. My second incubation experiment also showed the same thing for carbon dioxide, and there was no significant differences between any of the treatments, suggesting that cultivation does not have a significant effect on greenhouse gas production or on carbon dioxide production. But as you can see here, my field tilled cores are about the same as my tilled cores, and they all kind of fall in the same thing, suggesting that simulated tillage is a viable way of measuring greenhouse gas or its effect on greenhouse gas emissions in the lab. But interestingly, there was some significant effects on the first day. And so when looking at just the first day emissions, we can see the cores that I tilled myself had slightly higher emissions, especially compared to the ones that were tilled in the field. And this is likely due to the pores being destroyed and releasing gas. So for any gas measurements being made in the field right after cultivation, some of their emissions are likely due to this effect. When looking at the nitrous oxide emissions, they were considerably more varied than my carbon dioxide emissions. One problem I came into with this first incubation was the cores were not absorbing water like they should, and I suspected that was because the high clay soil was compacted when I took the cores because the conditions weren't very good. And this was confirmed after the incubation experiment was done and I measured the dry bulk density, and they were 1.43 kilograms per meter cubed, which is quite high for a clay soil. So to combat this, after the second week, I added water to the top of the cores in an attempt to bring them to field capacity, and then as soon as water started to drain out the bottom, I assumed that was field capacity. So that's why we see the spike after week two. But again, there's still no significant differences just due to the variability between cores. But generally, the cores that were fertilized had higher nitrous oxide emissions than the unfertilized, with the no-till having the highest, likely due to the better pore structure and water-holding capacity. My second incubation experiment was about the same thing. There's less variation, but it was also not significant. Part of this is due to the fact that this second one had quite low cumulative emissions compared to the first one, with this one having an average of about 24 milligrams per meter squared over 6 weeks compared to 282 in the first one. Soil samples that I took at the end of last year, I analyzed for residual ammonium and nitrate and found that there was no significant differences between the fertilized and unfertilized plots, meaning that all the fertilizer had been removed over the course of that 1 year. And this is also because the fertilizer was applied at the end of 2012, since it was fall broadcast, and then these cores weren't taken until the start of 2014, so there was a lot of time for that nitrogen to be blown off. So the differences that we see here are likely due to variations between, or with anaerobic microsites and residual nitrogen between each core. So the take-home message from all of this, it appears that forage stand termination method does not have a significant effect on carbon dioxide or nitrous oxide emissions, while nitrogen fertilization in previous years tends to increase both. And with that, I'd like to say thanks to my supervisors, Dr. Jeff Shano and Dr. Diane Knight, for all their support, and to my funding agencies for making all this possible, and also to my summer student for all his help this summer, because soil sampling in 6-foot-tall hemp is not very fun, so I'm glad I didn't have to do that alone. Thank you. Any questions?
Hands up, please. for a couple of questions, several questions, 5 minutes.
I don't think so. The plots were all really close together, so I would imagine no. There probably would have been more variation in the field, I would imagine, because this, especially with the Carrot River field, they had a problem with flooding there, and it's being a glade soil, like they have a lot of water around there, so I imagine there would have been a lot more variability. The Arbor Field ones probably would have had less variability had they not been so compacted, and that, I'm not really sure how to get around that if we maybe sharpened the edges of the PVC tubing when we took the cores. But yeah, I would imagine there'd be more variability out in the field.
Any more questions? We still have a couple of minutes left. Do you have any questions for the previous presenters or Matthew?
I have not measured that yet because I'm waiting for my last cores to dry out before so I can measure the bulk density on my second ones. But I imagine they're somewhere around 35 to 40%. It's a very high clay soil.
Do you agree that the clay content can influence no difference because nitrogen, like carbon, can protect nutrient aggregates?
Sorry, what was that?
Because carbon and nitrogen. Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. I would imagine the clay would have an effect just because of the water holding capacity, and like its ability to hold more water would probably increase the nitrous oxide emissions.
Any more questions? I have a question. Did you conduct this greenhouse gas emission in the lab, in the greenhouse, or in the field?
I was in the lab.
In the lab?
Mm-hmm.
What was the difference it looked like in what you do in the lab and in the field?
I'm not entirely sure on that. I would have liked to do it out in the field, but my field sites were 3.5 hours away, so it would have been a long to go out there and do gas sampling every day or so. It would have been a lot of travel.
Okay, thank you.